You're listening to the Pool Proof Wisdom Podcast, where we bring our authentic selves, refuse to raise grown folks, and share wisdom you can use. With your host, Charles K. Poole.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the podcast. As the holidays are up on us, I want you to know that this will be the last Pool Proof Wisdom podcast for this year, and hard to believe we'll be going into the fourth season in 2024, which I guess is appropriate given the fact that we've all been together for quite a while. But today, I want to talk to you about something that is very important as we're looking at our year ahead, and that is the opportunity to change. And today's guest, Jane Langham Miller with Purpose Driven Transitions, is here to speak with us about that. Now, a lot of people are reassessing whether their fabulous careers are so fabulous after all. Why? Because despite the material things that the careers are providing, something is missing. Maybe it's purpose, meaning, a sense that you're doing something that contributes to a pursuit bigger than yourself. I know that feeling because I've been feeling it a lot myself lately. As someone who writes books about faith and personal development and hosts this podcast focused on the same topics, I see that work as aligned with my sense of purpose more than anything I've ever done professionally. And to be honest, I devoted everything to it if I could. So while I continue to mull over how I'll get there, more than likely after transitioning from my professional career with corporate America whenever I retire, I needed some thoughtful and real advice about how I would go about doing that. In fact, millions of people are doing the same thing at this very moment, because it's not easy to determine. What is the path that takes our work from a place of material success to one of meaningful significance? I needed to know, and that's where Jane comes in. Now, I know Jane as she is a former colleague from Anheuser-Busch, who is a seasoned professional whose dynamic career has traversed diverse landscapes, evolving from her roots in design to a distinguished role as brand creative manager for Anheuser-Busch. Her journey then led her to a fulfilling chapter as a dedicated fundraiser for more than a dozen years, raising essential funds for various causes. Now, she's the visionary founder of Purpose-Driven Transitions, where she serves as a trusted consultant, guiding individuals through the intricate process of transitioning from the corporate world to the nonprofit sector. As the driving force behind Purpose-Driven Transitions, Jane specializes in working with clients who aspire not only to secure their dream jobs in the nonprofit sector, but to thrive in their newfound roles. Contrary to the prevalent myth that corporate professionals are ill-suited for nonprofit work, Jane has discovered that these individuals bring a wealth of valuable skills, perspectives, and passion that can significantly benefit the nonprofit world. For those contemplating a leap into that area, but unsure where to begin, Jane Langham Miller stands as a beacon of guidance, ready to illuminate the path toward purpose-driven careers. With a wealth of experience and a passion for empowering individuals to make a meaningful impact, she is poised to lead others through successful transitions and help them realize their aspirations with nonprofit organizations. My sessions with her really helped me define how I could eventually make a move of this type, and she confirmed that even thinking about it was the right thing to do. So today, good people, if you're thinking about something similar, you'll get a lot from today's episode. Good morning, Jane. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Charles. It is a pleasure to be here with you.
You know, I wasn't sure what timing this would happen in, but I'm glad it happened when it did, because we are still fairly fresh off the time that we spent together with you giving me counsel. And it just made so much sense to me to talk about this subject. It's the end of the year. People are thinking about what's ahead. And for many people, I understand that it's important to consider, what am I going to do next? Whether I'm at a point where I've been in my career for a long time, or I'm just looking for something new and different, or finally, I just don't get anything out of what I'm doing, so I'm looking for more purpose. Your organization and the work that you do is all around purpose, of course. And I thought, bring in Jane, have her talk about purpose, have her talk about transitions, and have her give people something that they can understand that will help them figure out which direction they can head in. You ready for that?
I am, Charles. Thank you so much. And it's interesting. I had just posted about this very subject last week. At Purpose Driven Transitions, I know that people very often at the end of the year are taking stock and reassessing what they've accomplished, what their goals have been for the past year, what goals they've achieved in this past year, and also what goals they want to achieve for the following year. People also are looking at different ways to have an impact in their community and to have more meaning in their work life. Mm-hmm. So this is a perfect opportunity to be talking about this. Right. Purpose Driven Transitions, is the mission is to help people not only find their dream job in the nonprofit sector, but to thrive in that dream job. Mm-hmm. And these are people who are currently in the corporate sector and are considering making that move into the nonprofit world.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people think when they are in their careers that they already have meaning. But when we're talking about meaning, when you're describing finding meaning and doing something different, how are you looking at that compared to what people do corporately?
Well, the difference is simple, is that it means that you're spending every day involved in making an impact in the community itself. Mm-hmm. You're working with participants. You're possibly doing research that is changing our thinking maybe in global warming, or you're involved in rescuing puppies and kittens, such as like the good work that some of our animal rescue organizations do. So, yes, there is meaning in the work in the corporate field. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because there was, so many companies produce great products, they provide great services. Mm-hmm. But in the nonprofit sector, what you're doing is filling in the gaps mm-hmm. that are not provided necessarily by our government or by companies.
First of all, sign me up for the work with the puppies and the kittens. I'm all about that, because that would give me purpose and just joy every hour of every day. But what I know for myself is as I reached out to you, and for those who don't know, what happened was I saw Jane posted on LinkedIn some months ago about her company, and I've been thinking for a lot of time, what am I going to do when the time comes when I decide to leave corporate America? For those who don't know, I have been at the work that I've done professionally for 36 years.
Wow.
36.
Wow.
And though I've done it, and I believe done it well, I'm still looking for something that feeds my spirit as much as it can, because you can make money, you can earn whatever you earn, and you can celebrate that. You can find purpose, as you've indicated, at the corporate level, by contributing to the way that company is perceived, the work that it's done, and a lot of times they do have foundations, so there's work that you can do there.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, you're looking and saying, what is it that's going to feed my spirit beyond that, because I need something more? And that's where you come in. And that type of work, when you're looking at it, means that the person is looking for something beyond the paycheck often as well. And yet, they don't know how to get there, because a lot of times they think, well, I don't know anything about a nonprofit. What do you teach them about what they can learn and understand?
Well, those are great questions, and that's a great conversation starter, because mm-hmm. so many people have so many great talents and skills, such mm-hmm. as yourself. You have this lifetime career of in the communications sector.
Right.
And nonprofits always need marketing and communications. Always, always, always. So when the time comes, most likely there's going to be a great spot for you at a nonprofit that is in need of your high-level communication skills. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So nonprofits come in all different sizes and shapes, all different types of missions. And so what I do is help people think through what their talents and skills are, what their passions are, what that itch is, that mm-hmm. What it is that they want, that itch they want to scratch, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And also just, what's the world that they want to see?
Right.
We want to make the world a better place. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why we go to work for a nonprofit.
Right.
So it's helping people narrow those things down and explore what's going to be a great fit for them. And trust me, as many different jobs you can possibly think of, some of them very niche positions, mm-hmm. there is a nonprofit somewhere that has that position.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So you're going to find it.
And as much as that is something where people are thinking, well, I don't know what I could do at a nonprofit, there are those who, of course, may think it's not an option for them because they think that nonprofits don't do things that are going to be useful and interesting to them. You teach people about how nonprofits operate, how they are set up, the different kinds and whatnot. Why is that important to the process?
It's really important to help broaden people's understanding of nonprofits. I mean, nonprofits, as I said, come in all different sizes and shapes. Of course, you know, there's a stereotype of a very small, scrappy nonprofit that is, you know, has a couple of staff people and they're running on a shoestring budget. But then there are some nonprofits that are multi-million dollar organizations, some of them in the billions. So like Lutheran Services is the largest nonprofit in the United States. They they are a $23 billion organization. So think about Lutheran Senior Services, some of the schools that they have. I mean, all the different services they provide. So within the umbrella of Lutheran Services, you're going to find a myriad of jobs that require all sorts of different talents and skills. So, I mean, there's also the others, I mean, the obvious ones here in the St. Louis area that are the, some of the larger ones that are well known, like our zoo, the botanical garden, et cetera. I mean, scientists and zoologists work for those organizations. So it's not just yours, it's not just the social workers that are needed in the nonprofit sector. It's people with all sorts of different talents and skills.
When you're thinking about this in the context of, again, those people who are like, well, I can't do this because of this reason, or I can't go to a nonprofit for that reason, you also make it clear that if you're going to be going to that direction, that there are things you shouldn't expect. For instance, if you are earning a whole lot of money at corporate, you're not going to earn that necessarily, even at the largest nonprofits necessarily. And that's something you need to take into account. So your counsel has always been, at least the way I perceived it, about helping an individual understand how can you make that leap with an understanding of what you're going to be potentially getting into. Could you talk to me about that?
Absolutely. So financial flexibility is a key important to this conversation. And yes, you are correct that generally you're going to make more money in the corporate sector. But keep in mind that the some of the very largest nonprofits employ highly compensated individuals. Think about our hospitals, all the doctors who work for those hospitals. They're working for a nonprofit, but we know that they are highly compensated individuals. Think of the people who are in the education system at our universities. Those people also very often are highly compensated. So yes, it is true that generally you could make more money if you were working in the for-profit sector, but you can still find a lot of high-paying, highly compensated jobs in the nonprofit sector.
And this gets to that point too about, well, it's in the name of your company, the word purpose.
Yes.
I want to talk about purpose because I think that, you know, a lot of people believe that you're born, you work, you die. That's pretty much it. You know, and that there's nothing in between that gives you any sense of purpose in your life. Now, let's go ahead and extricate that whole idea about working in corporate America, because we kind of addressed that.
Yeah.
But in terms of purpose, when it comes to nonprofit work, I really want to dig a little bit into what that actually can mean for an individual, because I have sought purpose in a lot of other ways. It's my avocational avenue outside of what I do professionally. But when people are looking at purpose, how do they individualize that? And what do you help them to get at that helps them understand what is important to them? Because a lot of times people say they're looking for purpose, but they don't know what that is. So how do you help them do that?
So the purpose that people will find is something that I myself, and I've never heard of others witnessing or experiencing in the corporate side, is that you will witness miracles. You will witness true miracles. And these miracles will happen at the most random of times. It's not like you can schedule and say, okay, on Tuesday at 10 in the morning, there's going to be a miracle here. It's just one of these things that you might sit in on a workforce readiness class and you see the light bulb moment go off in someone's head. Or someone who's gone through the workforce readiness training comes back and talks about what they've accomplished. I mean, there is a gentleman who he's works at the St. Charles Barber College. This man has incarceration in his background. He went through workforce readiness training. He got a scholarship to the barbershop college, which is amazing. He became a barber, then became a trainer at this barber, and now he is a mentor, and the relationship with his children is back on track, and his life is amazing. And he transformed into thinking, not only can I cut hair, but how can I give back to my community?
Right.
Another witness, a miracle that I witnessed was when I was working at a children's hospital. It was a child who came in who was very much into the outdoors. She wanted to go fishing really bad. She was in a wheelchair, and she had a wheelchair with the big nubby tires and stuff, but still it's like it not really user-friendly for going fishing, and she couldn't really walk well. So she was refitted with new splints and did physical therapy on learning how to manage and walk. And there's one day I was there, and she arrived, and she looked at me, she held my eyes, and then she walked over to her little sister who weighed probably like 30 pounds, and she picked this kid up and walked over to me. And I'm like, 6 months earlier, that little girl could not have picked up her sibling at all. This girl was in a wheelchair, and I'm like, it was just, to me, miraculous. She was able to go fishing with her dad and also pick up and carry her toddler little sister.
Wow.
So yeah, those are the miracles that you'll witness. And those are things that stay with you. There's no, you can't put a value to that.
Right.
And so that's what keeps you going. So you have to find a place where you know that you can make the finances work. And most often you're going to find a job that's going to work for you. I mean, any nonprofit that offers you a position that is less than living wage, walk away. Do not even go further with the interviews. But you will find that there are benefits to working for a nonprofit that you would never, ever imagine in the corporate sector.
So that's the thing that I find interesting. What you just said is you gave advice to someone that if this is what someone offered you, walk away. That's very realistic advice.
Yes.
So there is no pie in the sky to the skills that you teach and the counsel that you offer, because you're very realistic in your approach in terms of what people can expect. So with, you know, your clients, just as there are different ideas of what purpose is for each of them, there's a different perspective in terms of what they can hope for. And what you're trying to do with each of them is to listen intently to what they have to say, to understand where they're coming from, so to speak, and to use all of that to help give them a sense of direction. Is that accurate?
That is absolutely accurate. Yes, it is.
And once you give them that direction, what happens then from the context of, you know, we had 9 sessions?
Yes, we did.
9 sessions together. So over the course of the 9 sessions, once you've gotten to that point, how are you looking at how each session is going to play into what you've learned about them?
So basically at the end of the 9 sessions, you should be ready or even interviewing at nonprofits. You will have a most likely a polished resume. You will have looked at your contacts, that you, the people you know. And even if you think you don't know people who can help you, can lead you to a job, you will always know someone who knows somebody else. Because I think, as you know, 80% of jobs are found through networking. So sending in resumes cold in the nonprofit sector is, you may get some sort of a response. But most likely your best bet is through networking and learning how to network and ask the right questions. But to do that, you have to have an understanding of yourself, of what your talents and skills are, what your passions are, and how you can harness that and think about how does that translate into the nonprofit sector. Like if you are somebody who is really, really into data and analysis and such, you may want to be a grant writer, or you might work, want to work for one of the larger foundations that does all sorts of analysis in the community.
That was an interesting point during our sessions, because a little bit of admission here. The fact is, as you were providing that information, one thing that I discovered and acknowledged was when you were saying that networking thing, remember what I said? I don't like asking people for help. So it's always a very challenging thing, but that's an important aspect of
it,
because I'd never really thought of it in that context until it came up during our sessions, and working on how do I move from where I am, which is not liking to ask people for things, to realizing that it's not so much asking for help as much as it is asking for support and awareness and understanding. And that in and of itself was a switch for me that you helped to flip, because it was hard. You know, Jane said, give me the name of your contacts and, you know, people that you can contact. And I was like, well, I don't really like doing that.
Yeah.
So it was an assignment that became a task for me to work through, and I'm still working through it. So I think that's the important aspect, is it really is personalized, right?
Yes,
it's personalized counseling.
It's very much so. And, you know, it is hard to ask people for things, but at the same time, we're all wired to want to help. Mm-hmm. It's very few people who won't help you in some way. Mm-hmm. You know, even if it's just a 5-minute conversation, they might give you an idea who to call, what to look for. They might send an email that's connecting you with somebody else. Mm-hmm. So we are wired to help. Mm-hmm. And it's just sometimes we have to, like in my case personally, I have to get out of my own way.
Right.
Ask for help. And it's hard. Exactly. It's really hard.
Yeah, because you're used to things the way you're used to things.
I can do it myself.
Exactly. Well, you know, that was my whole thing. I was like, because that was the experience that I admitted to you. I said that with the exception of maybe two instances, every other job I've had in that 36-year career, I've gotten on my own. And I kind of felt like, well, if it's worked before, it'll work again.
Right.
But this is a different avenue because you are walking into a different realm of possibility, right?
That is absolutely true. And, you know, it's a whole different sector. So it's new people and new ways of connecting. And also nonprofits are very more people-oriented, more connections, more, I mean, some people say it's more warm, fuzzy as opposed to analytical. But it is relational, very, very relational. And, that's part of, that's one of the differences between nonprofits. I mean, networking is important on the corporate side also, but the relationship part plays a, I think, a more important role on the nonprofit sector.
And where we are today in the world, you know, I can't speak for everybody, nor will I try, but it's clear that a lot of people are looking at the state the world is in and realizing all the need there is out there. I sometimes find it hard. I certainly don't watch the news that much anymore. Even social media, I have got to kind of clean out here and there because it's filled with so many images and indicators of the world being one that's becoming somehow more and more disconnected, more and more less caring. And when we're looking at these various nonprofits, particularly the ones that are about elevating people's experiences so that they can have good lives, it becomes, I think, one of those issues for anyone who has sensitivity to this to say, what can I do?
Right.
Right. And, you know, you can look at your life and you can say what makes you comfortable, but you can't ignore that ongoing drumbeat in your head and your heart that says, I need to be doing something here. And it's beyond volunteering. It's about being out there in it. That aspect of it, do you find makes people more interested in services like yours or just more reticent about bringing forth that they want to do something that's going to help, quote, change the world?
I think it makes them more interested. Even if they're just simply watching what's going on, what I'm doing. There are several people who have reached out to me several times and said, I'm so glad that you're doing this. They said it's needed. And also they're watching to see how this evolves. I mean, part of my purpose on this is changing the conversation and changing the perception of the value that someone who with corporate experience provides in the nonprofit sector. Yes, there's a lot of noise out there about things that are just horrible, absolutely horrific, terrible, bad. But then when you look and see what's quietly going on just beneath the surface, it's incredible. I'll use the St. Louis Area Diaper Bank, for example. There is so often when I'm driving, like, say, through Webster Groves and other similar parts of town, there will be signs in front of a house that says diaper drop off. And I know what that's about. They are volunteering to collect diapers that then goes to the St. Louis Area Diaper Bank. And the St. Louis Area Diaper Bank then distributes diapers to needy families with young children, with, you know, babies. Because diapers are incredibly expensive. So there is this undercurrent of people who are always going to be doing good work and are going to be ignoring all the noise. And in fact, they're very often not calling attention to themselves because they're not doing it for the attention. They're doing it because they want to make our community better. They want to help. Hope that
In your, when I was introducing this segment, I mentioned that you yourself work with nonprofits. This is not just stuff that she's making up, good people. She actually has done herself. And, you know, you had a long, successful career at Anheuser-Busch. We won't get into the fact that those other people came and blew up the company and ruined everything. Okay, maybe we will. But the thing is, when the departure from that came, and you were looking at these opportunities that came up, what was it, if I may ask, that drove you to say, hey, I see something I can do here? Because that is foundational to what you're offering. You've done it yourself. So yes. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. So you're right. I had a very long career with Anheuser-Busch. I loved it. Mm-hmm. It was so much fun. But I did feel like there was some meaning missing. I mean, I was very proud of the work that we did as a corporation. I'm very proud of the product. I still drink the product because I like Bud Select. I just do. But I got involved with Ronald McDonald House in St. Louis. There were several of us at the brewery who got involved. And I worked for several years, or volunteered for several years, on their largest fundraiser of the year. And it was a dinner auction on Sunday night and then a two-session golf tournament on Monday, the next day. Mm-hmm. And so I loved being involved in that. It was fun and interesting. And I saw the impact that it makes on families. You know, something I love about Ronald McDonald House is it doesn't discriminate. No matter what your income, your position in life, your age, or anything, on some random day, your life will be turned upside down because of something happens to your child. And you need the medical care that is provided by, like in the St. Louis area, here in St. Louis. And it, for families who live 60 miles or further away, Ronald McDonald House is a godsend. So I decided that I would stay at Anheuser-Busch until I was age 55 and then retire and then start working in the nonprofit sector. Well, those plans got accelerated a little bit because of,
big evil.
Yes. A change of things. But that's okay. So I spent about 12 years working for nonprofits, and my very first job was with the Salvation Army. And I still love that organization. Yeah. They do amazing work, especially with disaster relief and working with addiction and providing, you know, clothing and all sorts of things for people in need. And there's no questions asked. It was, if you're hungry, they feed you. They have that mindset. And I absolutely love that. And also the Salvation Army, those people that you see wearing those suits, they have basically given their lives to the Salvation Army. They've given their lives to the Salvation Army and God, and they go wherever the Salvation Army sends them. And I was just so impressed with that. And they don't call attention to themselves. Right. Their focus is on helping others. So anyway, I got my first job there. And then as life does, I was offered another position at another place, worked on a capital campaign. I worked for a company that does consulting and provides, you know, insight and management to nonprofits. And then I'd say my very best job was working at Connections to Success, where I raised money for them. Connections to Success started out as Dress for Success. And so when they started out, they were Dress for Success Midwest, and they were the second Dress for Success to start out, and they are still the second oldest affiliate in the world. Dress for Success is a global organization now. Connections to Success grew in their services, and they basically provide workforce readiness for people, for older youth, up to, I don't think there's an age limit. And they work with people who are in the community here, and they also have contracts with the Missouri Department of Corrections. So it was an amazing job. I learned so much. It was just phenomenal. But I also hit a stage in my life where I wanted to be able to call my own shots on my hours. And no disrespect to any nonprofit, any place that I've worked, but I want to travel at this stage of my life. I want the freedom and flexibility to travel. I also wanted to have the freedom and flexibility to be present as my parents age. And when you're working full time, you know, 50 plus hours or more a week, it's hard to do that.
Sure it is.
So I stepped back and thought, what can I do? And I thought, I am uniquely qualified to help people make that leap from corporate to nonprofit, because I've done it.
Right.
And what shocked me is I started looking around and doing some research on this, and I could not find anybody who specializes in this.
I've never seen it.
Right.
Right.
And, you know, I reached out to some of the larger nonprofit consulting companies here in town and asked them, you know, because a lot of times they will help provide qualified candidates to nonprofits to help fill positions. And I asked, do you recruit from the corporate sector? And the answer was no. And I asked why. And it was very simple. They just said, they're not qualified. And I found that to be so curious. So curious. So I started keeping a list of all the people I know, whether personally or just, you know, people I know in the community who have made that successful or just who have made the leap from corporate to nonprofit. 94% of them have been successful. 94%. That's huge.
A
couple people didn't stay with it. One of them, she had a horrible experience, and I understand. A couple others, they needed coaching just to shift their thinking a little bit. And I think they would have made it. But otherwise, 94%. And they come from all different walks of life, all different industries. I mean, my favorite one is a woman who worked for the NFL. And she ended up working for the YWCA, leading the YWCA. So people take all sorts of interesting paths. I mean, there's a gentleman in Kansas City. He worked in the casino industry, and he is now a fundraiser.
Who knew?
Right. But it's about taking care of people and keeping them engaged.
So I love that you shared all of that, because it brings two thoughts to mind. First of all, as I think back, you know, to what you described in terms of how you got to this point, I kind of, truthfully, I absolutely come from a belief system that says there are no coincidences. And you could not have fathomed then, when all of these things were happening, that you were being prepared for the work that you would ultimately end up doing. But you were.
Right.
And I think that's important to keep in mind. And then the other part of this is, when it comes to people looking at other people in terms of what they're qualified to do, I literally loathe it when people generalize about anything or anyone or any group, because you don't know what people are really capable of until they're given the opportunity.
Right?
So I love the fact that in your work, that that opportunity has allowed you to remind people of that in a very, very tangible way. Now, with that said, a lot of what you're doing on your own journey and what you're helping people to tap into for their own has obviously a lot to do with faith, right?
Yes.
Because there's a need to understand that it may not look like what you thought it would be. It may not be the experience that you thought you were going to have, but you are built for something different. Can you talk to me about what role that plays in terms of how you approach what you're doing and what you give to your clients and just others in general to help them understand the possibilities that lie ahead?
Absolutely. Faith is a very important piece of this. And it's faith not in the sense of who you pray to specifically, because we all have our different faiths, our different beliefs, but it's the faith that it is going to work out. I have learned over the years that very often you can't see the path ahead of you beyond that, maybe that next step or maybe even two steps ahead. You can't see it. You just have to have faith that that path is going to appear. And then when you turn around and look behind you, you see that path that you've forged, and it's there as clear as can be.
Absolutely.
And so you have to just keep stepping forward, and know that when you step forward, there will be firm footing underneath your feet, even if it's just one step at a, at a time. It's there.
Yeah. And when that happens, where people make that connection, it literally shifts their perspective on so many different things.
It does.
Yeah. And you don't know, again, where they're going to necessarily go until they land, or when their clock has come to a point where they're saying now is the time. But when they leave your sessions, I'm speaking personally here, I was so uplifted by the awareness that each of those sessions provided me. I believe that everybody has to look at themselves to figure out who they are. I don't have a lot of time in my life for people who are not self-aware. We constantly have to look at ourselves and understand where we fit in the world to figure out how we move forward in the world.
Absolutely.
And the sessions were very helpful, because as I had been thinking about this for years, Because you know, you get to the point, you're like 30 plus years doing this, and you're like, am I really going to, are they going to peel me away from my desk sitting there having written a press release, you know, my cold dead hand on the keyboard, or am I going to do something different? And as I've been doing this work, which is all about personal development, faith-based walks, the understanding that we are all, to quote the late Dr. Maya Angelou, more alike than unlike.
Yes.
This has led me to you, and it's led me to other people who have become counselors. But when you're doing this work, what are the things that you hope? Because we know what I can say that I take away, and we know what other of your clients may say. But what is it that you always hope? Give me maybe three things that comes to mind that you hope that they take away from the sessions that will last them for the remainder of whatever time they're going to do, whatever it is they're going to do.
All right, three things. Well, first is that the belief in themselves that they can do this and do it well. Even if they can't see that path ahead of them, but they are going to be doing it and doing it well. Also, a deeper understanding of how our nonprofits work, because nonprofits are structured and organized differently than a for-profit business.
Right.
Their revenue model is different. Their overhead model is different. You know, the way they're governed is different. And also a deeper understanding of the importance of nonprofits in general, of the work that they do. You know, nonprofits are the second largest employment sector in our country. So clearly there's a huge need for what they do. And some of those needs will never go away. So they're here to stay.
And when that is looked at, in the context of each person's individual experience, again, speaking personally as a client, I think that the big thing is to figure out how big that dream for what you want to, you know, do is. Not how small can I get started, but given the fact that you come to each session. By the way, Jane comes to the sessions with a slide deck and information and data and preparation and detail. It's not just you all having a, you know, a kibitz or something like that. You're actually seeing data. She does a lot of research. She applies things to modern day practices and understanding. So you're not just getting all the warm and fuzzies, even though that's part of it.
Right.
You're getting hard data to back up what it is that you're telling people. And they can use that to help them in their own exploration as they begin to look at what the opportunities are. Yes?
That is correct. So this is an example of, you know, you're saying data. So in the St. Louis area alone, there are 18,000 registered nonprofits. 18,000. Oh my gosh.
Wow.
So all of those nonprofits are competing for funding. And a lot of those nonprofits have overlapping missions. So when someone approaches me and says that they want to start a nonprofit because of X, whatever this mission is that they're passionate about, I first of all, I applaud them for wanting to make an impact, a difference in the community. But I also ask them, have they done their research on other organizations that are doing similar work? And have they spoken to those organizations? And is there a possibility to maybe create a subset within under the umbrella of one of these established nonprofits? Because starting a nonprofit is hard. There's, of course, the mission, which is near and dear to their heart. But you have to have a board of directors. You have to have bylaws. You have to fundraise. You have to do reports to the government. You have to have audits. Audits cost $6,000 a year at minimum.
Wow.
And for a small nonprofit, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
So I help people using data shift their thinking a little bit, or just pause and reflect a little bit about what is they really want to accomplish. So can they partner with another organization? So there's that.
And that's the thing, you know, it's the warm and fuzzy part. You know, I want to go in and do nice things to help good people.
Yes.
That's wonderful. It's great. But there's a lot that goes into the nonprofit world that people never fathom because they just think that I go and do my part, but they don't see, for lack of a better phrase, how the sausage is made, right?
That's right.
And all of the fundraising, all of the politicking, because believe it or not, good people, you have got to politic. You've got to be a politician because you're asking people for money and you've got to use some political prowess to help you do those things.
Yes.
And that's part of the thing about this counseling, this training that you provide that I think is so important, because it's not just what you think. This isn't your mom and dad's nonprofit. How's that for a tagline?
That's a good way to say it. Yeah. Because it's, the stereotype of nonprofits is very often that it's small and scrappy and such. But you were right about, especially with the executive director, 50% of their time should be out in the community, engaging with the community in fundraising and building partnerships that also then allow them to expand their services. So 50% of their time is spent on that, not on the mission, which is that's where their heart is the mission. But actually, I'd say less than 50% of their time is actually spent on the mission, because when you're the executive director, then you have all the... You're running a business. It's a nonprofit business, but it's still a business. So you still have all the things of like HR issues and making sure that, you know, the budget meetings are, you know, happen every month, and then the reports to the board and all that. It's, you still, you're working in an organization that is near and dear to your heart, but it's very much of a business.
Yeah. And I'm reflecting back when you were talking about when you decided you wanted to travel more and do these things, you referenced 50 hours a week. And that's the key thing here, is that it is not, you get to have fun, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You do.
Yes.
You have purpose.
Yes, absolutely.
But it's work.
Yes, it is.
It's not that you're just going in there and you're just, you know, getting to do wonderful things and help people alone. It's a lot of work to keep a nonprofit up and running and effectively able to serve its mission.
That is correct. Yeah. So actually, working for a nonprofit, you are going to work as many hours or even more than you did in the corporate sector. And if you're in fundraising, it means that you are accessible pretty much at all times to your donors. And that means even, I mean, there are donors who will text you even on Saturday nights. So it's, it is a commitment. To do this job. And yes, the benefits are amazing. And there might be some benefits that you hadn't even planned on. Like when I worked at Connection to Success, we were able to purchase some of the clothing that was not business appropriate, but still good quality clothing for, you know, pennies on the dollar. And so that was a benefit there to be able to do that. But it's a real commitment to work for the nonprofit sector because the work never stops. The need never stops. You will be asked to do things that you would never be asked to do in the for-profit sector. Like you might be driving participants to and from work after they get their first job. If they don't have a car and they get a job someplace that is not along public transportation, the organization may have committed to giving them, making, helping them get to and from work the first 30 days. And so you have to be open to things like that too.
I love that you mentioned that, because you can't be hoity-toity and decide you're going, you know, this is beneath me. I can't listen, child, come on. This is what we're talking about, the reality of all of this. But I find that when you get into it, you know, and it's kind of like gardening in a way, you know, if you don't actually get your hands into it and help to cultivate things so that the opportunity for growth exists, you aren't going to be able to net anything after your effort. So getting into it is probably, you're the expert, so I'm going to probably say, correct me on this figure, but I would say at least 70% of the joy is getting into it so you intricately understand it.
Yes, absolutely, it is. And also, another reason for getting into it and actually being personally involved, with respectful boundaries, of course, is that if you hold yourself distant, the people you're serving are going to smell it. They'll know it. And also the donors will know it. They will absolutely recognize that there's a lack of authenticity. So yes, you do have to be involved. You have to go witness some of these things. Like I've been in the prisons and spent some time with some of these people who are in our prison system. As opposed to, you can't distance yourself.
And I think that that's key with any role. You know, I know a lot of people in corporate America, as do you, and they are like zombies. They're walking around, they're doing what they need to do, but they are not living into the experience. It's correct. Just literally there because they're like, I've got this long until I can get out of here. I need the paycheck, right?
Right.
It's like the fear of the Walking Dead. No, the Walking Dead live in corporate America a lot of times and a lot of those organizations. Yeah. But when you're talking about this kind of work, it's an active participation that has to have an opportunity to literally come both from here in the head, but here in the heart as well.
Yes.
And I think that as individuals are looking at the possibilities, it's how do I help translate that sensibility that I can make a difference, once you accept that premise,
yes,
into I will make a difference, so that they don't fall into the habit of going someplace and expecting immediacy of change and then get disenfranchised because that's not the way that world works. It takes a long time to see a lot of the progress that we see come about. Talk to me about that.
So yeah, change is slow. Mm-hmm. And at times it's frustratingly slow.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of this is over time I have learned that even though change may seem like it's at glacial speed,
mm-hmm.
when you look back, mm-hmm. you can see tremendous progress.
Right.
There's still work to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But there is tremendous progress. I'm involved in the Women's Foundation of Greater St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's still work to be done regarding pay equity for women.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look back over the course of my lifetime and think about how my own mother couldn't get her own credit card,
wow.
even though she worked full time.
Crazy.
I mean, just things like that, mm-hmm. you know, or when I was, you know, in public school, you know, the sports opportunities mm-hmm. for girls was mm-hmm. different than the sports opportunities for mm-hmm. boys. And just also the way we were counseled on the types of jobs mm-hmm. that would be appropriate for mm-hmm. us it was different.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those things have changed, you know, mm-hmm. like the credit cards, for mm-hmm. example. So we have to be patient.
Right.
We can't let up. We have to keep our foot on the pedal, so to speak, mm-hmm. on the gas.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have to know that change does take time because sometimes policies have to change. We have to change people's thinking. And sometimes that takes generations.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately,
right.
It can take generations.
Mm-hmm.
So
is there any difference that you discern when it comes to what you just described? Made me think about gender and
yeah.
gender politics.
Yeah.
But in the nonprofit world, is there one that, and I'll probably be skewed because I'm probably missing some pronoun or something, but I'm talking about everybody, y'all,
yeah.
so just in case you need to know. but in terms of one group of people, you know, being more inclined to work in nonprofit versus the other, is there anything like that that you're aware of?
I think it's people's hearts, honestly.
Mm. Okay. Okay.
Because I have seen people from all walks of life working mm-hmm. for nonprofits, people who are retired and then volunteer at nonprofits.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter what zip code you live in, how much, you know, what kind of car you're driving,
mm-hmm.
Whether you've had an easy life or a hard life.
Right.
I think it's what's coming from the heart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it is how people, maybe their family values or family culture very mm-hmm. often will drive that
mm-hmm.
of always thinking of others.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I mean, there are some people who will never donate a dime in mm-hmm. their life.
Yeah.
And that's
those
okay.
people.
Yeah. And that's their business. That's fine. And then there are other people who I'm thinking, how on earth are you doing this? Because
mm-hmm.
it, you know, they are very generous with mm-hmm. what they have.
Right.
So I hope that answers.
Yeah, it does. And I think that goes to a bigger perspective that, you know, there are a lot of people who no matter how much they have, they never have enough. They're always belly aching about what they don't have. And there are other people that you find who are tremendously happy. And by comparison, they would have what you would describe as nothing at all.
Yes.
And yet they are happy and they are hopeful and they are giving back to other people with the little that they have. So
right.
I think your point about it's all about what's within you, what's in your heart and what's
yes.
in your spirit, that drives people to want to help no matter what. And I think that when we're talking about the, you know, purpose that you're looking for, people who have purpose want to see it expanded usually. They don't want to use it just for themselves. I think that people often who do want to give the impression they're interested in other people, they may donate something, but they're always asking, what do I get for it in return? How do you deal with that?
So you always say thank you to mm-hmm. a gift. And unless there's a gift that compromises the organization, mm-hmm. you do welcome those gifts. I mean, people are, I think there's 9 different types of donors mm-hmm. and people have different motivators. I mean, sure, there are some that they do it for business reasons. Mm-hmm. It might be a write-off. It might be something where they are aligning with some of their business partners. Mm-hmm. But then there are some people who just simply give because they want to give. Mm-hmm. The mission is something that aligns with their values. Mm-hmm. And some people want to be anonymous. Other mm-hmm. people want to be honored and celebrated.
Mm-hmm. Name something after me, right? Yeah, right. Those people.
Okay. Right. And then, you know, there are some people who are, you know, they want to give consistently every mm-hmm. month. You know, mm-hmm. those are the monthly donors. Then there are some people who will just periodically write a big check mm-hmm. Because something speaks to them. And mm-hmm. a lot of times that's a disaster relief. People mm-hmm. will do that.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Right.
But there's something also about nonprofits is that, you know, you and I have talked about language and how mm-hmm. important that is, mm-hmm. is that when we're talking about nonprofits and some of the language that's used with nonprofits is honestly, it's some of it kind of sugarcoats things
a little bit. Yeah.
But there's what I've realized, and some of this is conversations with you, it's kind mm-hmm. of a light bulb moment, and also conversations then subsequently mm-hmm. with some other people, is that some language allows people to feel like there's an otherness. It separates yeah. them mm-hmm. from the people they're helping. Mm-hmm. And so I just want people to always be mindful that when you're talking about the work that's being done with nonprofits, especially if it's a people focused, mm-hmm. there is no other, so to speak. We're mm-hmm. all people. We're all in situations at times where we need a helping hand.
Right.
Regardless of how much money is in our bank account, mm-hmm. I guarantee you everybody's needed help from somebody else at some point. And so the language that we use, we have to make sure that it's not impersonal.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And Jane's speaking specifically about I would call it a love hate, but I just kind of hate the phrase like food insecure. I'm like, can't we just say hungry like we did for decades beforehand? Seriously?
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
we're food insecure. Listen, as many of you know, I have lived through homelessness and hunger, and I never walked up to anyone and said, please, sir, I'm food insecure. So just doesn't make any sense to
yeah.
me.
Yeah. And there's another phrase that it's called justice involved.
Oh yeah.
And that one, I flipped it. I thought, oh, so that means you're involved in the justice
right.
system. Like you're a
Not
judge or you're a public defender or whatever. And no, justice involved means that someone who has been convicted, or has been incarcerated.
Oh, make it stop.
Right. So
make it stop.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. Sometimes we sugarcoat things a little bit, mm-hmm. in the nonprofit sector, but, mm-hmm. I understand sometimes when a phrase is created mm-hmm. To categorize like a demographic or mm-hmm. a region or something like that. But mm-hmm. we have to be very careful about
right.
how we use those phrases because we're talking about real people.
And ultimately, if it supports the organization and it gets them what they need so that they can help the people that they need to help, I'm going to shut up about it. But I try not to hear those words that much.
Right.
So, Jane, as we get ready to wrap up here, I told you it was going to go quickly.
It's so fast.
But I'd love you to be able to share with the audience if they are looking to tap into your knowledge and your understanding in terms of their own journey toward eventually working with nonprofits. How do they reach you? How do they access you? Go ahead and tell them.
All right. So I would love, love, love to work with anybody who's interested in exploring what it would be like to mm-hmm. work for a nonprofit, especially people who are looking to find more meaning in their life, people who have been exposed to nonprofits, whether through being a volunteer or experiencing something personally where they see how important nonprofits are. Mm-hmm. You can find me on LinkedIn.
Okay.
I'm on Facebook. But LinkedIn is actually your best bet.
Yeah, LinkedIn, yeah. And it's Jane Langa Miller.
That is correct, Jane Langa Miller.
Yeah. Can't give her just half the name. You got to give her the whole name.
Yeah, my last name is Langa Miller.
And if you reach out to you by LinkedIn with a message directly, yes. You'll get right back with them.
Absolutely, I do. Okay. I check it several times a day. Okay. So yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, Jane, our time is up, but this has been, as I fully expected, you are our year-ending episode, and I can't think of a better way to end than talking about doing well and someone who helps people understand the good that they can do. So thank you so much for being my guest today. It's been a blast.
Thank you. I am honored to be here, especially the last one of the year.
Yeah.
Wow. That is just amazing to me.
Going
so thank you.
Out on a high note. That's how I see it.
Woohoo!
All right. Thank you so much. We'll be talking again soon.
That sounds great. Thank you so much, Charles.
All right.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Pool Proof Wisdom Podcast. We always enjoy the company. Be sure to listen, like, subscribe, and share using Google and Apple Podcasts, Audible, Spotify, Anchor, Overcast, YouTube, or via RSS so you'll never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found value in this episode, we'd appreciate it very much if you simply tell a friend about the podcast too. Spread the word. Until next time, keep on living.